Radio presents a Hollywood Theater of the Ear production, Beyond 2000. A radio series devoted to stories of the next millennium. Now, here is your host, the award-winning writer and critic, Harlan Ellison.
I have a confession to make. We were planning to do a thoughtful think piece on the ethical structure of the universe as reflected in the thespic grandeur of Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, but somebody cut off our supply of popsicles and we returned to sanity. Reluctantly, we rang the doorbell, opened the door, and the first thing we saw as we opened the door and threw down our bags was Back to Methuselah, this 8-hour serial comedy by Bernard Shaw. So, we present one swell excerpt. In point of fact, a full act of Bernard Shaw's Back to Methuselah, the section titled The Thing Happens. Shaw wrote this under the influence of his fellow Fabianist, Mr. H.G. Wells. I thought you'd like to know that. And in the preceding act, to what you're going to hear now, ancestors of some of these characters that you're going to meet postulate that in the future it will be possible that people can actually will themselves to live longer, enabling them thus to save civilization. So as we open our story, that time has come, and that very thing happens. It is a summer afternoon in the year 2170 A.D. We are in the official parlor of the President of the British Islands, whom we find behind his desk, working the controls of a communications device.
Hello, Barnabas.
Oh. Is that you, President?
Yes. They told me you wanted me to ring you up. Anything wrong?
I wish to make a protest.
What? Another protest? What's wrong now?
If you only knew all the protests I haven't made, you would be surprised at my patience. It is you who are always treating me with the grossest want of consideration.
What have I done now?
You have put me down to go to the record office today to receive that American fellow and do the honors of a ridiculous cinema show. That is not the business of the Accountant General. It is the business of the President. It is an outrageous waste of my time and an unjustifiable shirking of your duty at my expense. I refuse to go. You must go.
My dear boy, nothing would give me greater pleasure than to take this job off your hands.
Then do it. That's all I want.
Don't switch off. Listen. This American has invented a method of breathing underwater.
What do I care? I don't want to breathe underwater.
Since you take it that way, I will go in your place. Well, it's a pity because, you see, this American thinks you are the greatest living authority on the duration of human life. And I...
American thinks? What do you mean? I am the greatest living authority on the duration of human life. Who dares dispute it?
Nobody, dear lad, nobody. Don't fly out at me. It is evident that you've not read the American's book. It points out that an extraordinary number of first-rate persons like you and me have died by drowning during the last two centuries, and that when this invention of breathing underwater takes effect, your estimate of the average duration of human life will be upset.
Upset by estimate? Gracious heavens! Does the fool realize what that means? Do you realize what that means?
I suppose it means that we shall have to amend the act.
Amend my act? Monstrous.
But we must. We can't ask people to go on working until they are 43 unless our figures are unchallengeable. Are you off? Where are you going to?
To that cinema tomfoolery, of course. I shall put this American imposter in his place.
God bless you, dear old chap. Hello?
Hello?
The President respectfully solicits the privilege of an interview with the Chief Secretary and holds himself entirely at his honor's august disposal.
He is coming.
Oh, that you, Confucius? So good of you. Come along. Well, illustrious sage and onions, how are your poor sore feet?
I thank you for your kind inquiries. I am well.
That's right. Sit down, make yourself comfortable. Any business for me today?
None.
Oh. Have you heard the result of the by-election?
A walkover. Only one candidate.
Any good?
He was released from the county lunatic asylum a fortnight ago. Not mad enough for the lethal chamber. not sane enough for any place but elected office. Very popular speaker.
I wish the people would take a serious interest in politics.
I do not agree. The Englishman is not fitted by nature to understand politics.
Then how did we get our reputation as the pioneers of liberty?
By your steadfast refusal to be governed at all.
Oh, stuff! Do you imply that the administration of which I am president is no government?
I do. I am the government.
You fat yellow lump of conceit!
Only an Englishman could be so ignorant of the nature of government as to suppose that a capable statesman cannot be fat, yellow, and conceited. Many Englishmen are slim, red-nosed, and modest. Put them in my place, and within a year you will be back in the anarchy and chaos of the 19th and 20th centuries.
Oh, if you want to go back to the Dark Ages, I've nothing more to say. But we did not perish. We extricated ourselves from that chaos. We are now the best governed country in the world. How do we manage that if we are such fools as you pretend?
You did not do it until the slaughter and ruin produced by your anarchy forced you at last to recognize necessary two inexorable facts. First, that government is absolutely necessary to civilization, and that you could not maintain civilization by merely doing down your neighbor, as you called it, and cutting off the head of your king whenever he happened to be a logical Scot and tried to take his position seriously. Second, that government is an art of which you are congenitally incapable. Accordingly, you imported educated negresses and Chinese to govern you. Since then, you have done very well.
So have you, you old humbug. Well, if you have nothing for me to do, I'm going to leave your heel for the rest of the day and enjoy myself. What would you recommend me to do with myself?
Give yourself up to contemplation, and great thoughts will come to you.
Will they? Well, if you think I'm going to sit here on a fine day like this with my legs crossed waiting for great thoughts, you exaggerate my taste for them. I prefer marine golf. Oh, by the way, I forgot something. I have a word or two to say to the Minister of Health.
Yes, her number is...
Yes, I know it.
I cannot understand her attraction for you. For me, a woman who is not yellow does not exist. Save as an official.
I beg your pardon.
Turn off the visual.
There you are.
Who is it?
It's me. President. Burj Lubin. I had no idea your bedroom switch was in. I beg your pardon.
I have slipped my robe on now. Stupid of me. I was talking to another lady this morning, and I left the peg in.
Oh, but I am so sorry.
Why? It was my fault.
Well, I suppose you were used to it in Africa.
Your delicacy is very touching, Mr. President. It would be funny if it were not so unpleasant, because, like all white delicacy, it is in the wrong place. How do you think this scarf suits my complexion?
Oh, how can any really vivid colour go wrong with a black satin skin? Oh, can't you find an official pretext for coming to see me? I mean, isn't it ridiculous that we've never met? Oh, it's so tantalising to see you, talk to you, and to know all the time that you are 200 miles away and that I can't touch you.
I cannot live on the East Coast. It is hard enough to keep my blood warm here. Besides, my friend, it would not be safe. These distant flirtations are very charming, and they teach self-control.
Oh, damn self-control! Oh, no, I want to hold you in my arms these sex episodes, why can I not resist them? Disgraceful.
I forgot. There is something for you to do this morning. You have to go to the record office to receive the American Barbarian.
Confucius, once for all, I object to this Chinese habit of describing white men as barbarians.
I will make a mental note that you do not wish the Americans to be described as barbarians.
Not at all. The Americans are barbarians, but we are not.
I suppose the particular Bavarian you're speaking of is the American who has invented a means of breathing underwater.
He says he has invented such a method. For some reason, which is not intelligible in China, Englishmen always believe any statement made by an American inventor, especially one who has never invented anything. Therefore, you believe this person and have given him a public reception. Today, the Record Office is entertaining him with a display of the audiovisual records of all the eminent Englishmen who have lost their lives by drowning since the cinema was invented. Why not go to see it, if you are at a loss for something to do?
What earthly interest is there in looking at a moving picture of a lot of people merely because they were drowned? If that had any sense, they would not have been drowned, probably.
That is not so. It has never been noticed before. But the Record Office has just made two remarkable discoveries about the public men and women who have displayed extraordinary ability during the past century. One is that they retained unusual youthfulness up to an advanced age. The other is that they all met their death by drowning.
That's funny. Can you explain it?
It cannot be explained. It is not reasonable. Therefore, I do not believe it.
Mr. President.
Oh, what's the matter? Are you ill?
No, I must speak to you in private.
I shall go.
What on earth is it? Have some oxygen.
Oh, I have had some. Go to the Record Office. You will see men fainting there again and again and being revived with oxygen as I have been. They have seen with their own eyes as I have.
Seen what?
Seen the Archbishop of York.
Oh, why shouldn't they see the Archbishop of York? What are they fainting for? Oh, has he been murdered?
No, he has been drowned.
Oh, good God. Oh, where? Oh, when? How? Oh, poor fellow.
Poor fellow? Poor thief? Poor swindler, poor robber of his country's exchequer. Poor fellow indeed. Wait till I catch him.
How can you catch him when he's dead? You're mad.
Dead? Who said he was dead?
Well, you did. Drowned.
Oh, will you listen to me? Was old Archbishop Haslam, the present man's last predecessor by four, drowned or not?
Oh, I don't know. Look him up in the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Was Archbishop Stickett, who wrote Stickett on the Psalms, drowned or not?
Yes, mercifully. And he deserved it.
Was President Dickinson drowned? Was General Bully Boy drowned?
Who's denying it?
Well, we've had moving pictures of all four put on the screen today for this American. And they and the Archbishop are the same man. Now tell me I'm mad.
I do tell you you're mad. Stark raving mad.
Am I to believe my own eyes or am I not?
You can do as you please. All I can tell you is that I don't believe your eyes if they can't see any difference between a live Archbishop and two dead ones. Yes?
The Archbishop of York to see the President?
Have him in. I'll talk to the scoundrel.
Not while you are in this state.
Send the Archbishop in at once.
If you lose your temper, Barnabas, remember that we shall be 2-1.
Good day, Mr. President.
Good day, Mr. Archbishop. Be seated.
Good day, Mr. Accountant General.
Good day to you. I have a question to put to you, if you don't mind.
Certainly. What is it?
What is your definition of a thief?
Rather an old-fashioned word, is it not?
It survives officially in my department.
Our departments are full of survivals.
In my department, sir, a thief is a person who lives longer than the statutory expectation of life entitles him to, and goes on drawing public money when, if he were an honest man, he would be dead.
Then let me say, sir, that your department does not understand its own business. If you have miscalculated the duration of human life, that is not the fault of the persons whose longevity you have miscalculated. And if they continue to work and produce, they pay their way, even if they live 2 or 3 centuries.
I know nothing about their working and producing. That is not the business of my department. I am concerned with their expectation of life, and I say that no man has any right to go on living and drawing money when he ought to be dead.
You do not comprehend the relation between income and production.
I understand my own department.
That is not enough. Your department is part of a synthesis which embraces all the departments.
Is it synthesis? Oh, this is an intellectual difficulty. This is a job for Confucius. I heard him use that very word the other day. I wondered what he meant. Hello? Put me through to the Chief Secretary.
You are speaking to him.
An intellectual difficulty, old man. Something we don't understand. Come and help us out.
May I ask how the question has arisen?
Ah, you begin to smell a rat, do you? You thought yourself pretty safe.
Steady, Barnabas. Don't be in a hurry.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Secretary.
honor us by taking a seat, Osage?
Ceremony is needless.
We wish to put a case to you, Confucius. Suppose a man, instead of conforming to the official estimate of his expectation of life, were to live for more than 2 centuries and a half. Would the accountant general be justified in calling him a thief?
No. He would be justified in calling him a liar.
I think not, Mr. Chief Secretary. What do you suppose my age is?
50.
Ooh, you don't look it. 45. And young for your age.
My age is 283.
Mad, am I?
Well, you're both mad. Excuse me, Archbishop, but this is getting a bit... Well...
Mr. Chief Secretary, will you, to oblige me, assume that I have lived nearly 3 centuries as a hypothesis?
What's a hypothesis?
It does not matter. I understand. Am I to assume that you have lived in your ancestors, or by metempsychosis?
Good Lord, what a brain. Oh, Confucius, what a brain.
Nothing of that kind. Assume, in the ordinary sense, that I was born in the year 1887, and that I have worked continuously in one profession or another since the year 1910. Am I a thief?
I do not know. Was that one of your professions?
No, I have been nothing worse than an archbishop, a president, and a general.
Has he or has he not robbed the exchequer by drawing 5 or 6 incomes when he was entitled only to one? Answer me that.
Certainly not. The hypothesis is that he has worked continuously since 1910. We are now in the year 2170. What is the official lifetime?
78.
78 into 283 goes more than 3.5 times. Your department owes the Archbishop 2.5 educations and 3.5 retiring pensions.
Stuff! How can that be?
At what age do your people begin to work for the community?
3. They do certain things every day when they're 3. You know, just to break them in, you know. But they become self-supporting, or nearly so, at 13.
And at what age do they retire?
43.
That is, they do 30 years' work, and they receive maintenance and education without working for 13 years of childhood and 35 years of superannuation, 48 years in all, for each 30 years' work. The Archbishop has given you 260 years' work and has received only 1 education and no superannuation. You, therefore, owe him over 300 years of leisure and nearly 8 educations. You are thus heavily in his debt. In other words, he has effected an enormous national economy by living so long. And you, by living only 78 years, are profiting at his expense. He is the benefactor. You are the thief. May I now withdraw and return to my serious business, as my own span is comparatively short?
It's no use trying these Chinese subtleties on me. I'm a plain man, and although I don't understand metaphysics and don't believe in them, I understand figures. And if the Archbishop is only entitled to 78 years and he takes 283, I say he takes more than he is entitled to. Get over that if you can.
I have not taken 283 years. I have taken 23 and given 260.
Do your accounts show a deficiency or a surplus?
A surplus. That's what I can't make out. That's the artfulness of these people.
That settles it. What's the use of arguing? The Chinaman says you're wrong, and there's an end of it.
I say nothing against the Chinaman's arguments. But what about my facts?
If your facts include a case of man living 283 years... I advise you to take a few weeks at the seaside.
Oh, let there be an end of this hinting that I am out of my mind. Come and look at the visual record. I tell you, this man is Archbishop Haslam, Archbishop Stickett, President Dickinson, General Bully Boy, and himself into the bargain, all 5 of them.
I do not deny it. I never have denied it. Nobody has ever asked me.
But damn it, man! Beg your pardon, Archbishop, but really, really...
Don't mention it. What were you going to say?
Well, you were drowned 4 times over. You're not a cat, you know.
That is very easy to understand. Consider my situation when I first made the amazing discovery that I was destined to live 300 years.
Pardon me, Such a discovery was impossible. You have not made it yet. You may live 1,000,000 years if you have already lived 200. There is no question of 300 years. You have made a slip at the very beginning of your fairy tale, Mr. Archbishop.
Good Confucius. He has you there. I don't see how you can get over that.
Yes, it is quite a good point. But if the Accountant General will go to the British Museum Library and search the catalogue, he will find under his own name a curious and now forgotten book, dated 1924, entitled The Gospel of the Brothers Barnabas. That gospel was that men must live 300 years if civilization is to be saved. It showed that this extension of individual human life was possible and how it was likely to come about. I married the daughter of one of the brothers.
Do you mean to say you claim to be a connection of mine?
I claim nothing. As I have by this time perhaps 3 or 4 million cousins of one degree or another, I have ceased to call on the family.
Gracious heavens! 4 million relatives? Is that calculation correct, Confucius?
In China, it might be 40 million if there were no checks on population.
Oh, this is a staggerer. It brings home to one... But it isn't true, you know. Let us keep sane.
You wish us to understand that the illustrious ancestors of the Accountant General communicated to you a secret by which you could attain the age of 300 years?
No, nothing of the kind. They simply believed that mankind could live any length of time it knew to be absolutely necessary to save civilization from extinction. I did not share their belief. At least I was not conscious of sharing it. I thought I was only amused by it. It was not until I got into serious difficulties with the pension authorities after turning 70 that I began to suspect the truth.
The truth?
Yes, Mr. Chief Secretary. The truth. Like all revolutionary truths, it began as a joke. As I showed no signs of aging after 45, my wife used to make fun of me, saying that I was certainly going to live 300 years. She was 68 when she died, and the last thing she said to me as I sat by her bedside holding her hand was, "Bill, you really don't look 50. I wonder..." She broke off and fell asleep, wondering, and never awoke. Then I began to wonder, too. That is the explanation of the 300 years, Mr. Secretary.
Yes. It is very ingenious, Mr. Archbishop. Very well told.
I was over 80 before the 1969 Act for the redistribution of income entitled me to a handsome retiring pension. Owing to my youthful appearance, I was prosecuted for attempting to obtain public money on false pretenses when I claimed it. I could prove nothing, for the register of my birth had been blown to pieces by a bomb dropped on a village church years before in the first of the big modern wars. I was ordered back to work as a man of 40 and had to work for 15 years more. The retiring age being then 55.
As late as 55? How did people stand it?
They made difficulties about letting me go even then. I still look so young. For some years, I was in continual trouble. The industrial police rounded me up again and again, refusing to believe that I was overage. They began to call me the Wandering Jew. You see how impossible my position was? I foresaw that in 20 years more, my official record would prove me to be 75. My appearance would make it impossible to believe that I was more than 45, and my real age would be 117. What was I to do? Bleach my hair? Hobble about on 2 sticks? Mimic the voice of a centenarian? Better have killed myself.
You ought to have killed yourself.
I did kill myself. It was quite easy. I left a suit of clothes by the seashore during the bathing season with documents in the pockets to identify me. I then turned up in a strange place, pretending I had lost my memory and forgetting my name and age and everything about myself. Under treatment, I recovered my health, but not my memory. I have had several careers since I began this routine of life and death. I have been an archbishop 3 times. When I persuaded the authorities to knock down all our towns and rebuild them from the foundations or move them, I went into the artillery and became a general. I have been president.
Dickinson?
Yes.
But they found Dickinson's body. His ashes buried in St. Paul's.
They almost always found the body. During the bathing season, there were plenty of bodies.
Look here. Do you chaps realize how awful this is? Here we are, sitting calmly in the presence of a man whose death is overdue by 2 centuries. He may crumble into dust before our eyes at any moment.
Not he. He'll go on drawing his pension until the end of the world.
How do you know?
How do I know?
Yes. How do you know? I did not begin even to suspect until I was nearly 70. I was only vain of my youthful appearance. I was not quite serious about it until I was 90. Even now, I'm not sure from one moment to another, though I have given you my reason for thinking that I have quite unintentionally committed myself to a lifetime of 300 years.
But how do you do it? Is it lemons? Is it soya beans? Is it...
I do not do it. It happens. It may happen to anyone. It may happen to you.
Ooh. Then we three may be in the same boat with you, for all we know.
You may. Therefore, I advise you to be very careful how you take any step that will make my position uncomfortable.
Well, I'm dashed. Ooh, one of my secretaries was remarking only this morning how well and young I was looking. Barnabas, I have an absolute conviction that I am one of one of the victims of this strange destiny.
Yes?
The domestic minister has called.
Who does she say has called?
The domestic minister.
Oh, dash it. That awful woman.
She certainly is a bit of a terror. I don't exactly know why, for she's not at all bad-looking.
Oh, for heaven's sake, don't be frivolous.
I'm not frivoling. I did not ask the lady here. Which of you did?
It is her official duty to report personally to the president once a quarter.
Oh, that. Then I suppose it's my official duty to receive her. Well, they'd better send her in. You don't mind, do you? She'll bring us back to real life. I don't know how you fellows feel, but I'm just going dotty.
In a moment, Beyond 2000 will return with Act 2 of The Thing Happens. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Where local underwriting is provided by European Sleepworks, backed by scientific studies on the causes of sleep disruption, European Sleepworks has designed a mattress to address those problems. More information on the web at sleepworks.com. And by 1185 Design, a Palo Alto-based graphic design firm specializing...
The conclusion of The Thing Happens.
The president will receive the domestic minister at once.
Delighted to see you, Mrs. Lutestring.
Honored by your celestial presence.
Good day, madam.
I have not had the pleasure of meeting you before. I am the Archbishop of York.
Surely we have met, Mr. Archbishop. I remember your face. Oh, no. I remember now. It was someone else.
Are you sure you are mistaken? I also have some association with your face, Mrs. Lutestring. Something like a door opening continually and revealing you, and a smile of welcome when you recognize me. Did you ever open a door for me, I wonder?
I often opened a door for the person you have just reminded me of, but he has been dead many years.
May I ask how many years?
It does not matter. A long time.
You mustn't rush to conclusions about the Archbishop, Mrs. Lutestring. He's an older bird than you think. Older than you, at all events.
I think not, Mr. President. But the subject is a delicate one. I had rather not pursue it.
Have you, Mr. Archbishop, any ground for assuming, as you seem to do, that what has happened to you has not happened to other people as well?
Yes, by George, I never thought of that.
I have never met any case but my own.
How do you know?
Well, no one has ever told me that they were in this extraordinary position.
That proves nothing. Did you ever tell anybody that you were in it? You never told us. Why did you never tell us?
I'm surprised at the question coming from so astute a mind as yours, Mr. Secretary. When you reached the age I reached, before I discovered what was happening to me, I was old enough to know and fear the ferocious hatred with which human animals, like all other animals, turn upon any unhappy individual who has the misfortune to be unlike themselves.
If there were others like you, had they not the same reason for keeping the secret?
That is true, but I should know. You short-lived people are so childish. If I met a man of my own age, I should recognize him at once. I have never done so.
Would you recognize a woman of your age, do you think?
I...
What is your age, Mr. Archbishop?
283, he says. It's his little joke. Do you know, Mrs. Lutestring, he'd almost talked us into believing him when you came in and cleared the air with your robust common sense.
Do you really feel that, Mr. President? I hear the note of breezy assertion in your voice. I miss the note of conviction.
Look here, let us stop talking damn nonsense. I don't wish to be disagreeable, but it's getting on my nerves. The best joke won't bear being pushed beyond a certain point. That point's been reached. I'm rather busy this morning. We all have our hands pretty full. Confucius here will tell you that I have a heavy day before me.
Have you anything more important than this thing, if it's true?
Oh, if it's true? But it isn't true.
Have you anything at all to do?
Anything to do? Well, have you forgotten, Barnabas, that I happen to be president and that the weight of the entire public business of this country is on my shoulders?
Has he anything to do, Confucius?
He has to be president.
That means he has nothing to do.
No. Very well, Barnabas. Go on, making a fool of yourself. Go on.
I am not going to leave this room until we get to the bottom of this swindle.
This what did you say?
These expressions cannot be sustained. You obscure the discussion in using them.
Oh, well, this unnatural horror, would that satisfy you?
That is in order. But we do not commit ourselves to the implications of the word horror.
By the word horror, the accountant general means only something unusual.
I notice that the honorable domestic minister, on learning the advanced age of the venerable prelate, shows no signs of surprise or incredulity.
But she doesn't take it seriously. Who would? Hey, Mrs. Lutestring?
I take it very seriously indeed, Mr. President. I see now that I was not mistaken first. I have met the Archbishop before.
I felt sure of it. This vision of a door opening to me and a woman's face welcoming me must be a reminiscence of something that really happened, though I see it now as an angel opening the gate of heaven.
Or a parlour maid opening the door of the house of the young woman you were in love with?
Is that the reality? How these things grow in our imagination. But may I say, Mrs. Lutestring, that the transfiguration of a parlour maid to an angel is not more amazing than her transfiguration to the very dignified and able domestic minister I am addressing. I recognize the angel in you. Frankly, I do not recognize the parlour maid.
What is a parlour maid?
I was a parlour maid in the house of one of the accountant general's remote ancestors. You asked me my age, Mr. Chief Secretary. I am 274.
Oh, you don't look it. But you really, really don't look it.
Look again, Mr. President.
Yes. Yes, you do look it. I am convinced. It's true. Now call up the lunatic asylum, Confucius, and tell them to send an ambulance for me.
Why have you given away your secret, our secret?
They found it out. The cinema records betrayed me. But I never dreamt that there were others. Did you?
I knew one other. She was a cook. She grew tired and killed herself.
Dear me. However, her death simplifies the situation, as I've been able to convince these gentlemen that the matter had better go no further.
What? When the president knows? We'll be all over the place before the end of the week.
Really, Mrs. Lutestring, you speak as if I were a notoriously indiscreet person. Barnabas, have I such a reputation?
It can't be helped. It's constitutional.
It is utterly unconstitutional. But as you say, it cannot be helped.
I deny that a secret of state has ever passed my lips. Except perhaps to the Minister of Health, who is discretion personified. People think, because she's a negress...
It does not matter much now. Once it would have mattered a great deal. But my children are all dead.
Yes, the children must have been a terrible difficulty. Fortunately for me, I had none.
There was one daughter, who was the child of my very heart. Some years after my first drowning, I learnt that she had lost her sight. I went to her. She was an old woman of 96, blind. She asked me to sit and talk with her, because my voice was like the voice of her dead mother.
Oh, the complications must be frightful. Really, I hardly know whether I do want to live much longer than other people.
You can always kill yourself, as Cook did, but that was influenza. Long life is complicated and even terrible, but it is glorious all the same. I would no more change places with an ordinary woman than with a mayfly that lives only a day.
What set you thinking of it first?
Conrad Barnabas's book. Your wife told me it was more wonderful than Napoleon's Book of Fate and Old Moore's Almanac, which Cook and I used to read. I was very ignorant. It did not seem so impossible to me as to an educated woman. Yet I forgot all about it, and married and drudged as a poor man's wife, and brought up children and looked 20 years older than I really was. Until one day, long after my husband died and my children were out in the world working for themselves, I noticed that I looked 20 years younger than I really was. The truth came to me in a flash.
Oh, an amazing moment. Your feelings must have been beyond description. What was your first thought?
Pure terror. I saw that the little money I had laid up would not last, and that I must go out and work again. They had things called old age pensions then. Miserable pittances for worn-out old labourers to die on. I thought I should be found out if I went on drawing it too long. The horror of facing another lifetime of drudgery, of missing my hard-earned rest and losing my poor little savings, drove everything else out of my mind.
No wonder you did not kill yourself. I often wonder why the poor in those evil old times did not kill themselves. They did not even kill other people.
You never kill yourself, because you always may as well wait until tomorrow. And you have not energy nor conviction enough to kill the others. Besides, how can you blame them when you would do as they do if you were in their place?
Devilish poor consolation, that.
There were other consolations in those days for people like me. We drank preparations of alcohol to relieve the strain of living and give us artificial happiness.
Oh, alcohol.
A little alcohol would improve your temper and manners and make you much easier to live with, Mr. Accountant General.
Oh. By George, I believe you. Oh, try it, Barnabas. Oh.
But when I stopped working and lived on my pension, the fatigue of my life's drudgery began to wear off because, you see, I was not really old. I recuperated. I looked younger and younger. And at last I was rested enough to have courage and strength to begin life again. Besides, political changes were making it easier. Life was a little better worth living for the 9/10 of the people who used to be mere drudges. After that, I never turned back nor faltered. My only regret now is that I shall die when I am 300 or thereabouts. There is only one thing that made life hard, and that is gone now.
May we ask what that was?
Perhaps you will all be offended if I tell you.
Offended? My dear lady, do you suppose after such a stupendous revelation that anything short of a blow from a sledgehammer could produce the smallest impression on any of us?
Well, you see, it has been so hard on me never to meet a grown-up person. You are all such children. And I was never very fond of children, except that one girl who woke up the mother passion in me. I have been very lonely sometimes.
Oh, but surely, Mrs. Lutestring, that has been your own fault. If I may say so, a lady of your attractions need never have been lonely.
Why?
He means that you might have married. Curious how little they understand our position.
I did marry. I married again on my 101st birthday. But of course I had to marry an elderly man. A man over 60.
But why had you to marry an elderly man? Why not marry a young one? Or should I say a middle-aged one? If my own affections were not already engaged, and if... Well, to tell the truth, I was not a little afraid of you. You are a very superior woman, as we all acknowledge. I should esteem myself happy in...
Mr. President, have you ever tried to take advantage of the innocence of a little child for the gratification of your senses?
Oh, hang it all. What do you take me for? I mean, what right have you to ask me such a question?
I am at present in my 275th year. You suggest that I should take advantage of the innocence of a child of 30 and marry it?
Can you short-lived people not understand that as the confusion and immaturity and primitive animalism in which we live for the first 100 years of our life is worse in this matter of sex than any other, you are intolerable to this in that relation?
Do you mean to say, Mrs. Lutestring, that you regard me as a child?
Do you expect me to regard you as a completed soul? When I think of the blessings that have been showered on you and contrast them with the poverty, the humiliations, the anxieties, the heartbreak, the insolence and tyranny which were the daily lot of mankind when I was learning to suffer instead of learning to live. When I see how lightly you take it all, how you quarrel over the crumpled leaves in your bed of roses, how you are so dainty about your work that unless it is made either interesting or delightful to you, you leave it to the negresses and Chinamen. I ask myself whether even 300 years of thought and experience can save you from being superseded by the power that created you and put you on your trial.
My dear lady, our Chinese and coloured friends are perfectly happy. They're 20 times better off here than they would be in China or Liberia. They do their work admirably, and in doing it, they set us free for higher employments.
What higher employments are you capable of? You that are superannuated at 70 and dead at 80.
You're not really doing higher work. You are supposed to make the decisions and give the orders, but the negresses and the Chinese make up your minds for you and tell you what orders to give. Just as my brother, who was a sergeant in the guards, used to prompt his officers in the old days. When I want to get anything done at the health ministry, I do not come to you. I go to the black lady who has been the real president during your present term of office, or to Confucius, who goes on forever while presidents come and presidents go.
Now, this is outrageous. This is treason to the white race. And let me tell you, madam, I've never in my life met the Minister of Health, and that I protest against the vulgar colour prejudice which disparages her great ability and her eminent services to the state. Yeah, my relations with her are purely telephonic, gramophonic, photophonic, and may I add, platonic.
There is no reason why you should be ashamed of them in any case, Mr. President, but let us look at the position impersonally. Can you deny that what is happening is that the English people have become a joint stock company admitting Asiatics and Africans as shareholders?
Nothing like it. I know all about the old joint stock companies. Their shareholders did no work.
As president, I must not listen to unpatriotic criticisms of our national character, Mr. Archbishop.
As Archbishop, Mr. President, it is my official duty to criticise the national character unsparingly. We are letting all the power slip into the hands of coloured people. In another 100 years, we shall simply be their household pets. Either we shall go under as greybeards with golf clubs in our hands, or we must will to live longer.
Yes, that's it. I could not have expressed it in words, but you have expressed it for me. I know now that it took me a whole century to grow up. I began my serious life when I was 120. Asiatics cannot control me. I am not a child in their hands as you are, Mr. President. Neither, I am sure, is the Archbishop. They respect me. You are not grown up enough even for that. Though you were kind enough to say that I frighten you.
Honestly, you do. Will you think me very rude if I say that if I must choose between a white woman old enough to be my great-grandmother and a black woman of my own age, I should probably find the black woman more sympathetic. Yeah.
And more attractive in colour, perhaps?
Yes, since you ask me. More. Well, not more attractive. I do not deny that you have an excellent appearance, but I will say richer. Yes, more Venetian. Tropical. The shadowed livery of the burnished sun.
Our women and their favourite story writers begin already to talk about men with golden complexions.
Ah. Well,
what of it, madam? Have you read a very interesting book by the librarian of the Biological Society suggesting that the future of the world lies with the mulatto?
Mr. Archbishop, if the white race is to be saved, our destiny is apparent.
Yes, our destiny is pretty clear.
Have you time to come home with me and discuss the matter?
With pleasure.
No, you don't. Birch, you understand, don't you?
No, what is it?
These two are going to marry.
Well, why shouldn't they if they want to?
They don't want to! They will do it in cold blood because their children would live 300 years. It mustn't be allowed.
You cannot prevent it. There is no law that gives you power to interfere with them.
If they force me to it, I will obtain legislation against marriages above the age of 78.
There is not time for that before we are married, Mr. Accountant General.
There is time to send the lady to the lethal chamber before anything comes of your marriage. Don't forget that.
What nonsense, Mr. Accountant General. Good afternoon, Mr. President. Good afternoon, Mr. Chief Secretary.
I'm surprised at you, Mr. Barnabas. Your tone was like an echo from the Dark Ages.
Thieves! Cursed thieves! Vampires! What are you going to do, Birch?
Do?
Yes, do! There must be dozens of these people in existence. Are you going to let them do what the two who have just left us mean to do? And crowd us off the face of the earth?
Oh, come, Barnabas, what harm are they doing? I mean, aren't you interested in them? Don't you like them?
Like them? I hate them. They are monsters, unnatural monsters. They are poison to me.
What possible objection can there be to their living as long as they can? It does not shorten our lives, does it?
If I have to die when I am 78, I don't see why another man should be privileged to live to be 278.
But what can we do to them?
Kill them.
Oh, nonsense.
I would lock them up then. Sterilize them somehow, anyhow.
But what reason could we give?
What reason can you give for killing a snake? Nature tells you to do it.
My dear Barnabas, you are out of your mind.
Haven't you said that once too often already this morning?
I don't believe you will carry a single soul with you.
I understand. I know you. You think you are one of them.
Mr. Accountant General, you may be one of them.
How dare you accuse me of such a thing? I am an honest man, not a monster. I won my place in public life by demonstrating that the true expectation of human life is 78.6. And I will resist any attempt to alter or upset it to the last drop of my blood if need be.
Come, pull yourself together.
You will regret it if you do.
What is to make me regret it?
Every mortal man and woman in the community will begin to count on living for 3 centuries. Things will happen which you do not foresee. Terrible things. The family will dissolve. Parents and children will be no longer the old and the young. Brothers and sisters will meet as strangers after 100 years' separation. The ties of blood will lose their innocence. The imaginations of men, let loose over the possibilities of 3 centuries of life, will drive them mad and wreck human society. This discovery must be kept a dead secret.
And if I refuse to keep the secret?
I shall have you safe in a lunatic asylum the day after you blab.
You forget that I can produce the Archbishop to prove my statement.
So can I. Which of us do you think he will support when I explain to him that your object in revealing his age is to get him killed?
Bert, are you going to back up this yellow abomination against me? Are we public men and members of the government, or are we damned blackguards?
Have you ever known a public man who was not what vituperative people call a damned blackguard when some inconsiderate person wanted to tell the public more than was good for it?
Hold your tongue, you insolent heathen. Burge, I spoke to you.
Well, you know, my dear Barnabas, Confucius is a very long-headed chap. I see his point.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Then let me tell you that, except officially, I will never speak to you again. Do you hear?
You will. You will.
And don't you ever dare to speak to me again. Do you hear?
I will. I will. Goodbye, Barnabas. God bless you.
May you live forever and be the laughingstock of the whole world.
Oh, he'll keep the secret all right. I know, Barnabas. You needn't worry.
There are no secrets except the secrets that keep themselves. Consider, there are those films at the Record Office. We have no power to prevent the master of the records from publishing this discovery made in his department. We cannot silence the American. Who can silence an American? Not the people who were there today to receive him. Fortunately, a video can prove nothing but a resemblance.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. After all, the whole thing is confounded nonsense, isn't it?
You have decided not to believe it now that you realize its inconveniences. That is the English method. It may not work in this case.
English be hanged. It's common sense. You know, those two people got us hypnotized. Not a doubt of it. Yeah, they must have been kidding us. They were, weren't they?
You looked into that woman's face, and you believed.
Yeah, just so. Yes, that's where she had me. I shouldn't have believed her a bit if she turned her back to me. Do you really think
The Archbishop is an adult. When I was a child, I was dominated and intimidated by people whom I now know to have been weaker and sillier than I, because there was some mysterious quality in their mere age that overawed me. I confess that, though I have kept up appearances, I have always been afraid of the Archbishop. It is this that convinced me. It was this in the woman's face that convinced you. Their new departure in the history of the race is no fraud. It doesn't even surprise me.
Oh, come. Not surprise you? It's your pose never to be surprised at anything. But if you're not surprised at this, you're not human.
I am staggered, just as a man may be staggered by an explosion for which he has himself laid the charge and lighted the fuse. But I am not surprised, because as a philosopher and a student of evolutionary biology, I have come to regard some such development as this as inevitable. If I had not thus prepared myself to be credulous, no mere evidence of films and well-told tales would have persuaded me to believe. As it is, I do believe.
Oh. Well, that being settled, what the devil's going to happen next? I mean, what's the next move for us?
We do not make the next move. The next move will be made by the Archbishop and the woman.
Their marriage?
More than that. They have made the momentous discovery that they are not alone in the world.
Well, you think there are others?
There must be many others. Each of them believes that he or she is the only one to whom the miracle has happened. But the Archbishop knows better now. He will advertise in terms which only the long-lived people will understand. He will bring them together and organize them. They will hasten from all parts of the earth. They will become a great power.
Oh, I say, will they? Oh, I suppose they will. Oh, I wonder, is Barnabas right after all? Ought we to allow it?
Nothing that we can do will stop it. We cannot in our souls really want to stop it. The vital force that has produced this change would paralyze our opposition to it, if we were mad enough to oppose. But we will not oppose. You and I may be of the elect too.
Yes. That's what gets us every time. What the deuce ought we to do? Something must be done about it, you know.
Let us sit still and meditate in silence on the vistas before us.
By George. Yeah, I believe you're right. Yeah, let us.
Mr. President.
Oh, my dear Madam Health Minister.
Avaunt. Avaunt!
Are you at home?
No, I'm at Fishguard Bay. Why not run over and join me for the afternoon? I am disposed to be approachable at last.
but Fishguard? It's 270 miles.
There is a lightning express on the Irish Air Service at 16:30. They will drop you by a parachute in the bay. The dip will do you good. I will pick you up and dry you and give you a first-rate time.
Oh, delightful. It's a little risky, isn't it?
Risky? I thought you were afraid of nothing.
No, I'm not exactly afraid, but,
But you think it is not good enough. Very well.
No, stop! Oh, let me explain. Hold the line for just a moment. Oh, please.
Well?
The fact is, I've been behaving very recklessly for some time past, under the impression that my life would be so short that it was not worth bothering about, but... I've just learnt that I may live, much longer than I expected. Now, I'm sure your good sense will tell you that this alters this case.
Oh, Quite. Pray don't risk your precious life on my account. Sorry for troubling you. Goodbye.
No, please, please, hold on. I can convince you. Engaged. Oh, who is she calling up now? The chief secretary. Say I want to see him again just for a moment.
Is the woman gone?
Yes, it's all right. Just a moment, if... Confucius, I have some important business at Fishguard. The Irish Air Service can drop me in the bay by parachute. I suppose it's quite safe, isn't it?
Nothing is quite safe. The Air Service is as safe as any other travelling service. The parachute is safe. But the water is not safe.
Oh, why? They'll give me an unsinkable tunic, won't they?
You will not sink, but the sea is very cold. You may get rheumatism for life.
Oh, for life? Oh, that settles it. I won't risk it.
Good. You have at last become prudent. You are no longer what you call a sportsman. You are a sensible coward, almost a grown-up man. I congratulate you.
Well, coward or no coward, I will not face 300 years of rheumatism for any woman that ever was born. I'm going home. Yes. Good evening.
So early? If the Minister of Health rings you up, what shall I tell her?
Tell her to go to the devil.
Oh, no. Oh, these crude young civilizations, their manners.
Hogs! Hogs!
You have been listening to The Thing Happens from Back to Methuselah by Bernard Shaw. In the cast you heard Peter Dennis as the president, Ian Abercrombie as Barnabas, Tony Jay as Confucius, David Warner as the archbishop, and Jane Carr as Mrs. Lutesong.